Welcome to the Pint Glass Football Podcast.
This is Pint Glass Football. Drink beer, talk NFL and college football. I'm your host, Brad Fowler, and McKenzie Brewing is the official beer of Pint Glass Football. Follow them at McKenzie Brewing. Follow us at pintglassfootball.com. If you're new to the show, hit that subscribe button. What's up, PGF Nation? Hope you had a great 4th of July. Maybe some cold beers, maybe some barbecue, but we're back with another great show. A former player takes a shot at a current NFL quarterback. We'll each pick our top three defensive breakout players in this upcoming NFL season. We'll pick some sleeper teams that could surprise some people and make the college football playoff. And we'll draft our top eight NFL running backs for this season and a lot more. But joining me to break it all down, my co-host, Alex Higdon. Alex, what is going on?
Hey, Brad, as you said, as we get into, again, I mentioned last week, these dog days of summer. If you're in the South, it's finally gotten a little bit hotter. We've kind of had a mild summer, but now I would say within the last week and a half to 2 weeks, it's really hit the typical summer heat. So these are the days you want to sit back, you want to hear about football, you want to know what's going on, but here's the place to be.
Yeah, no doubt, man. It's heating up on the West Coast, too. Out here, it's hitting the 90s, upper 80s, and it's starting to get into those hot dog days for sure, but We're keeping it cool here at Pint Glass Football, like always, keeping you guys up to date, breaking it down, bringing you guys the best information in the NFL and college football, of course, and having fun doing it. But let's get to some news. Before we get into these fun discussions that we're going to have here, Alex, let's get to some news that dropped. Probably the biggest news recently since we recorded last, Alex, Isaiah Rodgers and Rashad Berry of the Indianapolis Colts and free agent Demetrius Taylor have been suspended indefinitely through at least the 2023 season for betting on NFL games last season. We talked about this story when it broke. We were kind of waiting to find out what the NFL was going to do here. The Colts have now waived both Rodgers and Berry. Now, ESPN has come out and reported that upward of 100 bets were placed by Isaiah Rodgers, and now including at least one wager on a game involving the Colts. So the NFL investigation into gambling violations, they got a lot of evidence here, Alex, but the one thing that they did come back with in this investigation, the reports have said that the NFL says that they didn't find any evidence of game manipulation. Alex, the optics around gambling in the NFL right now are just not good.
We expected some things to happen. I mean, when you open up your sport to this in this fashion, we know that football, I mean, hell, fantasy football, daily fantasy, college football, this is one of the biggest sports betting pools outside of boxing probably that you get on a week-to-week basis. I really want to focus on the Isaiah Rodgers thing for a moment because let's just go back for a moment. First thing is, betting in the facility, I think that's just the dumbest thing because your phone is geotagged. And these sports books, they have to notify the NFL by law. They have to notify the NFL that these players are gambling while on site. So that's a no-no. And that's not just gambling on football. That's gambling on the ping pong matchup in China or something like that. It does not matter what you're betting on. You cannot bet inside the facility or on the facility grounds. That's first and foremost. So if you get caught doing that, you're just dumb. Because you have a problem, you probably need to go call one of those numbers that they tell you that they run through real fast at the end of the commercial. Isaiah Rodgers, he had been making bets $25 to $50 for all of his bets. And all of a sudden, he popped up with a $1,000 bet on his own running back on over or under how many yards that rushing yards that will be had by a Colts running back. That is Pete Rose-esque type of betting that the NFL cannot have. That's something that you don't want. That is a red flag across the board. That means that this player could have had some inside information and why he made the bet the way that he did make the bet. And that is the one that I think they are really, truly looking at and they want to truly avoid. Betting on site, you're going to get a slap on the wrist, maybe 4 games, 5. Well, actually, I think they've been giving everybody a year because they're just coming down sternly on everybody to deter everyone. However, but that specific one, betting on a prop bet on your own player, on your own team where you could have information that means you're susceptible to be given that information out as well. So that is the one that I really wanted to focus on that I have the biggest issue with, and I think the NFL probably does quietly as well.
They have to put an end to this, and they're going to come down stern. We talked about it. I'm actually surprised that he didn't get a lifetime ban. The one-year suspension I actually thought was a little lighter than I expected, but the Colts have just flat out said, look, we're done with this guy. And this could end up costing these guys their career. And it's really sad because they decided to make this dumb decision to bet on NFL games when they knew they shouldn't have been doing it, especially when it's involving your own team. They just can't have it. CBS Sports has signed J.J. Watt to a multi-year deal to be an NFL studio analyst for this upcoming season. He's going to be starting week one of the 2023 season. Now, J.J. Watt, as we know, a three-time Defensive Player of the Year, a first ballot Hall of Famer. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I loved this guy as a player, Alex. He was so fun to watch, but I'm not sure I really ever saw him as a future media analyst. It's cool to see companies like CBS and Fox and some of these, you know, big media companies that cover the NFL. It's cool seeing them signing more non-quarterbacks to these types of roles. So I applaud that. But I don't know if you watched Hard Knocks in season last year with the Cardinals. He was a guy who was featured on there quite a bit. I don't know. He just doesn't seem like he'd be very good in a media role. What do you think, Alex?
I mean, I think what happens is you get a lot of, we're coming into this modern era of players that everyone is familiar with, and you now are getting the quick turnover of them from the field on into the booth immediately. Jason Witten was immediately handed, I believe he got Monday Night Football. He was given, I believe it was Monday Night Football that he was given, and it just did not work. These things take time. It takes a lot of seasoning. Obviously, there are some people that are just naturals. Their characteristics, their character just oozes out from the TV screen onto the viewership, so it may work immediately. But I think that's an outlier. You know, you have to go through the ranks. You have to do some of those games, you know, in Nebraska on a Saturday at 2 o'clock when nobody's watching. I'm not talking about the Cornhuskers. Sometimes you have to go through the rank and file to get to this place instead of being handed immediately what we saw, I guess, for the most part with Romo, where everybody was going crazy. And I was just like, I've sat with quarterbacks. They do that all the time. That's not amazing. It's just probably the first time that you guys are seeing it from that perspective, because even Troy Aikman wasn't doing that the way what Romo was doing. So I understand the oohs and ahs of what Romo was calling out. He was calling out a lot of the plays as a current modern day player that was playing 1 year and immediately went to the booth. So he was recognizing a lot of things. But these things take time. I don't see the character in J.J. Watt to be able to jump on the screen. Yes, everything that happened in Houston, he became some sort of a celebrity. Well, let's just say a countrywide celebrity in that sense. So his name does ring bells outside of his play on the field. But I agree with you. I don't think this is something that is, you can just jump in a booth or jump on that desk. If he's sitting at the desk, there'll at least be 4 to 5 of the season people there that will be able to ease him in, and he'll be able to hopefully find his way in. But this is not something simple. And I know that we're in this day and age of microwave everything, but this is something that you can't just jump in and it's automatic. Just add J.J. Watt and make some things take time.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Romo, because he's an example of a guy who jumped into the number one seat with Jim Nantz. And if you guys remember, they took Phil Simms out of that number one broadcast spot and immediately put Romo in there before he had ever called a game. And I think a lot of people were questioning the move, saying, wait a second, this guy's never called a game. You're going to jump him into your number one booth. And he was good. And he was really good. And he surprised a lot of people. Now, I know he's not everyone's cup of tea, but he's become a very popular broadcaster. Something you said there really stuck with me, though, because this isn't quite on that level. I think, not that any of these jobs are easy. I don't want to make it seem easy. These jobs are not easy. To jump on the mic in front of the camera, you have these small windows where you have to get the point across and you have to articulate it quickly. You got to get in and out of your breaks. It's not easy. And there's a lot of pressure involved with these types of jobs. But at the desk, like you said, a studio analyst, and you've got other guys to kind of bounce off of, and it's a little more conversational. There's not so much pressure on you to be making a call after every play like we see in a game. So I think that kind of eases some of it. I think it's a little easier of a job to be a studio analyst. But we have seen guys recently that have come in and really struggled. Now, Jason Witten, you mentioned, look, I loved him as a player too, but he was terrible. I mean, there's no way around it. He was really bad in that role. Drew Brees is a guy that comes to mind with NBC, and he was bad. I mean, it was a hard watch. And that was a desk studio analyst job as well. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this transition works out. They signed him to a 3-year deal, which is also kind of surprising. That's a lot of faith in a guy when you really haven't seen him do anything. I would have expected maybe a 1-year deal, see how it works. But they're going to roll with it, and it's going to be interesting to see. Alex, former NFL wide receiver Plaxico Burress was recently on the Carton Show and said, quote, Dak Prescott has reached his ceiling as a quarterback with the Dallas Cowboys. The Cowboys won't win a championship with him. He also went on to say that they can win, but they won't win a championship. Now, Dak's numbers have always been pretty good. 61-36 record in 97 games dating back to the 2016 season. He's completed over 66% of his passes, 166 touchdowns to only 65 interceptions. So on paper, you look at this guy, he's always been an above-average quarterback, but in 6 playoff games, Prescott has completed only 63% of his passes, averaged less than 2 touchdowns per game, and has thrown 5 picks. I tend to agree with Plaxico on this, and I'm curious to get your thoughts, Alex. I think Dak is a really solid quarterback, but so far, he's really never shown me that he can be the guy in the big moments. And he's had some really talented teams around him there in Dallas, some teams that, quite frankly, a better quarterback might have taken to higher levels. This is a guy, let's face it, Cowboys quarterback. He is a polarizing figure whenever he gets brought up in conversation. I'm curious to get your thoughts.
He's right and he's wrong. And two things can be true. Everything that you just said about Dak during the regular season is absolutely correct. But as I always say, and I always like to reference, the moving the sticks notation about quarterbacks, there's trucks and there's trailers. Dak is a trailer like most quarterbacks. When we look at his regular season record and you are that successful in terms of, like you said, 61-36, 60, basically if we average up 67% completion percentage, 166 TDs to 65 interceptions, and just last year was really when he kind of went off the rails a little bit by having the most interceptions that he's ever thrown, but still 66%. This tells me one thing. He is good during the regular season, but from my perspective, the coaching tends to fall off when it gets to the playoffs because it's very easy. You're just planning week to week and you're not looking. You're installing. If anybody's ever seen the Hard Knocks or the in season, as Brad alluded to earlier, there's a lot of interns there. There's a lot of things going on in terms of the coaching staff. One half of the coaching staff is working on the current game plan. There's another half of or another part of the coaching staff that's looking at next game. So everybody's not totally focused on one thing. They're focused on several different things at one time. When you get to the playoffs is when everything shrinks. It's like the NBA playoffs. During the NBA season, it's all over the place. But when they get to focus on one team for 7 games, you get a better game, you get a better series, and so on and so forth. So that's what you're seeing here. When teams get to lock in, and now they've had 17 games of what the Cowboys do well, somebody's been monitoring it. If you have a Bill Belichick-type staff, they have an intern that's been monitoring what's been going on all season long because they expect that they will see you in the playoffs. And now they get to pick apart those things that they know that you're not good at to put you in situations. And part of me feels that, yes, it's Dak. However, that's also because this is the one league where coaching matters. I'll say it again, coaching matters. This is when your coach needs to step up. And I know I'm going long-winded here, but I think it's a point that really needs to be talked about. If we talk about the Super Bowl, that was a very close Super Bowl. We all know, and if you've been paying attention, we all know that Andy Reid had his offensive coordinator reach out to Doug Peterson. And Doug Peterson said, they have problems when you put your wide receivers in motion. They get confused on who's supposed to switch and whose responsibility is whose. There were 2 plays in the second half on both sides, on the left side and the right side, that the Chiefs used this play and scored a touchdown. One side, I believe, was Kadarius Toney. The other side, I believe, was Isaiah Pacheco. And on the second one, they lined up in the wrong side. They were trying to go back to the same right side, but the play lined up on the player lined up on the wrong side, and Patrick Mahomes just improvised right in that set. And both plays were touchdown scoring plays. Coaching matters. So I think there's a part of where Plaxico is correct that that can't carry the team, and that's fine. But to me, there's another part that says the coaching staff is also failing him because they're not doing anything innovative. Once they're not pulling out anything new. They're not counteracting what the defense is doing to what they normally do. They're just hammer to nail as opposed to changing up, switching up, having a play that they may have only run five times all year long, but pulling it out there. They're not doing the things that elite coaches or coaches that are ascending would do. And I think the coaching staff is failing Dak, as well as perhaps Dak just is not at the talent level to what Plaxico is speaking to.
Is Dak Prescott better than Jalen Hurts?
He's a better arm talent.
I agree. Hurts is a better athlete.
I don't know if that offense runs either offense. I don't know if you put Jalen Hurts in Dallas and you put Dak in Philly, to our point last week about offenses where you think you could just put players, you know, plug and play players. I don't think either one of those offenses work if you just switch them out. I think they may win some games, but I don't know if it's as successful. So, because I think those things were built solely around those talent levels of those quarterbacks.
The systems are very different, and that's what makes it a kind of a hard conversation to have. But the reason I asked that is because you started talking about the Super Bowl, and it got me thinking about Jalen Hurts and that Philly team. Mm-hmm. And I started it got me thinking, is Jalen Hurts actually better than Dak Prescott? I don't know if he is. And that's not a shot at Jalen Hurts. It's going to sound like it. It's going to sound like it, because people are like, he was almost an MVP and, you know, and he got him to a Super Bowl and blah, blah, blah. And Dak's never done that. I get all that. I mean, it's going to sound like a shot, but it's not. Because like you said, I think the arm talent and playing the position, I think Dak can do more things than Jalen Hurts overall as far as throwing the football especially, which, let's face it, that's still the most important part of playing quarterback.
Right.
And so I think about what you were saying there as far as the team and the coaching. I look at Jalen Hurts and I think the guy's got a better team and better coaching. And they maximized Jalen Hurts, whereas I don't think this coaching staff has ever maximized Dak Prescott. Reports are stating that San Diego State told the Mountain West Conference it'll be staying in the league despite reports that the Mountain West had already received the school's notice of resignation from the conference. Now, this is a really interesting story, Alex, because San Diego State's impending decision last Friday comes the day that the Pac-12's board of directors again met up for an update on the league's television negotiations. And once again, no new media deal is expected to be announced. This decision from San Diego State is very telling, in my opinion, Alex, and it shows just how bad the situation for the Pac-12 has become. The Pac-12 needs to get the media deal done by July 21st. That's Pac-12 Media Day. Time is running out on this league, Alex. We've talked on prior episodes about these reports of other teams looking to leave the league. It has been a huge talking point all offseason, and it feels like it's gone from bad to worse after hearing this story.
Yeah, I'm completely confused here. And for number one, for the Pac-12 to not have a TV deal is very odd. I would love to be a fly on the wall in those meetings and those and or those negotiations to know why they don't already have this in place. That's my number one. I see an organizational problem issue there, number one. And whoever came up with the plan, and understanding that this, in terms of UCLA and USC leaving, you had 2 years to come up with a plan that you knew what you were going to have to do. And now for San Diego State, if we fast forward to now say that they're not interested in going into from leaving the Mountain West, and I repeat, the Mountain West, to go to the Pac-12 is a damning blow to whatever it is that they're trying to do. And I'm sorry, this is, you know, I look at things from a top-down standpoint. I'm no longer looking at teams. I have to look at this board. What is going on? Again, if these are Fortune 500 companies and we are part of the board of directors, or we are the board of directors looking at our CEO where he is taking our company, we are having complaints and we're calling that CEO to the mat to understand, what are you doing and why does this great product that includes Argan, that has Nike and so on and so forth, why don't we have a television deal so that we can now start to expand, and we should have been ahead of the curve instead of we are behind the curve now. They need to get their ducks in a row because they are out of order, which is why we're seeing it play out in the public and their business looking out of order. If this was a stock, it's a falling stock, it's a failing stock, and it's sell, 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 sell.
I couldn't put it any better, Alex. I completely agree with you. This is just a huge red flag because, like you said, the Pac-12 loses USC and UCLA. I'm not going to put that on the current commissioner, George Kliavkov. I'm not going to blame him for that. He inherited a bad situation with Larry Scott. Basically, the second he entered this league, they took off. That's not necessarily on him, but it is on him to try to regroup this conference and try to pull it together here and keep things afloat. And he's doing a terrible job of that so far because the optics are looking worse and worse. Not only do you lose your two big LA schools, then all the reports have been that the Pac-12 was looking at San Diego State and possibly SMU to replace those schools. Now, obviously, you're not going to be able to find schools to replace the brands that those LA schools are. I get that. But at least bring in some teams to kind of help patch this thing back together. And now you've got San Diego State that looked like it was a lock to be joining this conference, suddenly say, thanks, but no thanks. We're going to stick with the Mountain West. What does that say about how they feel about your conference? That means your conference is on really shaky ground and they don't want anything to do with it. I think it's very, very telling. And they have, like I said earlier, they have got to get a media deal done sooner rather than later, because if they don't hear within days, I'm talking in the next couple of weeks, if we don't start hearing something legitimate from this conference about a media deal, you are going to start to see some serious signs of teams leaving. We could potentially see, before the season starts, we could see some teams announcing that they're going to be leaving this conference, and then all hell breaks loose. Last season, we saw TCU basically come out of nowhere and make it not only to the college football playoff, but to the national championship game. It got me thinking, Alex, who are some sleeper teams that could surprise people this year and make the college football playoff? Alex, who's a team you're circling?
I don't know if this is necessarily a sleeper team, but shout out to our guy Duke. He has talked me into LSU being one of these teams. Looking at Harold Perkins, looking at Mason Smith, they're returning JT. We're looking at this offense coming together. That defense is going to be incredibly well coached and well played, you know, because there's always the perennial Georgia in turn, and as well as Alabama. So it's very hard to get three SEC teams in there. So I'm looking at LSU to unseat Alabama and or Georgia to make it into that playoff, because the way that I'm looking at this team, the way that I see this team set up, and I'm saying that as a Florida fan, so you know I'm not being biased, but this is a team, and like I said, it may not be the sleeper team, but this is a team that not only can make it, that this is a team that I'm strongly considering as my favorite to win it all. Just basically looking at the makeup and looking how they came together, looking how they rebounded after the Joe Burrow era, and how they've bounced back with the coaching and what they've put together in terms of coaching staff, as well as the recruits that they brought in and where they are now, just that quick turnaround. And I think LSU is not only my sleeper to be into the college playoffs, but my sleeper to win it all.
Alex, I love that take. I love that take. And actually, that is a team I considered putting on my list. They didn't make my list, but I really strongly considered putting them on here because I'm thinking the exact same thing. And it's because this roster is loaded. They've got a quarterback, a big-time quarterback in Jaden Daniels coming back this year. They've got one of the best coaches in college football in Brian Kelly. He has this program headed back in the right direction here. It's a sleeper in the sense that they're not the SEC favorite, because you've got Georgia, the two-time defending national champ. You've got Alabama, that's obviously always a contender as long as Nick Saban's there. So from that standpoint, they're certainly not a favorite in that loaded SEC. that makes them a sleeper in that regard. They're not a sleeper program. And I think that's the key thing here, because we know LSU is a blue blood college football program. But when you compare them to where they are right now, if they were to upset teams like Alabama and Georgia and make it out of the SEC and get to that college football playoff, I think it would be considered a sleeper story. So I love that pick. I've got a team in a similar situation, a team that's a bit of a sleeper team, not a sleeper program, because historically this is a blue blood program. I'm circling the Texas Longhorns. Similar to LSU, like we just talked about, one of the best rosters in all of college football. It starts with quarterback Quinn Ewers. He has big time talent. This kid can spin it. I like his talent, and I like what I've seen from him. Texas also has a group of wide receivers that is, quite frankly, maybe the best in the country, led by Xavier Worthy. They also have Georgia transfer A.D. Mitchell, who's going to add depth and talent at the wide receiver room. And tight end Jatavion Sanders is a guy who is going to play on Sundays and, quite frankly, might be a future first-round pick, big-time tight end. I expect the defense to be better this year as well. I think a lot of people expect them to compete for the Big 12 this year. I don't think that's a shocker, but I don't know how many people are talking about them as a potential team that can make a real run at the college football playoff. I think they just might.
You know what? That is a team that has been talked about. They've been slowly building back because everyone has been saying Texas has too much talent within the state and they have a decent amount of money that they should not be as irrelevant as they are. Going into the SEC, you know, Texas being one of the premier football states, everybody's always recruiting into your territory. Now you're coming into the SEC territory where you're going to be able to get access to these other schools, but now they're also going to have access to your area a little bit more as well. So you need to establish yourself and make some noise immediately. So that's a great pick. My other pick, and this is going to pain me a lot, again, as a Gator fan, and as well as because my cousin was a wide receiver for the school as well, but Florida State, God, that hurt coming out. But Florida State, with what Mike Norvell has done since he's gotten there, with the recruiting class that he's put together, and he's used a staple of what Bobby Bowden did in terms of having these trees at wide receiver. I mean, no wide receiver under 6'3". These just tall. They run routes. They're open. They may not be as fluid as you would want your professional wide receivers to be, but for what he's trying to do in college, it works. And having, you know, the quarterback that he had last year and coming into it this year, you know, Jordan Travis is going to be, this guy is going to be someone that's going to be talked about within a year when it's time for him to go into the draft. He's already shown what he can do last year. Now watch as he continues to matriculate within this offense. Florida State is a team that I am looking at. The way that this team is put together, the way that Mike Norvell has rallied the troops and circled the wagons after they were trying to find the right coach, they seem to have plucked the right guy, put this person in position, and FSU is going to be a team that is going to, from my perspective, going to be a top 10 team that's going to have a chance to make the playoffs this year.
Yeah, it was a little rocky for Mike Norvell when he first came over to FSU, but he's starting to get that program going in the right direction. I'm with you, Alex. I read recently Phil Steele, who's one of the most respected analysts in college football, he's high on Florida State this year. He thinks that they're a legitimate contender. I've got a team right here in my own backyard that most sports books and analysts aren't picking as a favorite to win their conference, but I think they're a team to watch out for as a big-time sleeper. That's the Washington Huskies, because like I said, a lot of analysts are going to be picking USC and Oregon and Utah as teams that are that should be the favorites in the Pac-12. Don't sleep on Washington. They won 11 games last season, and they ended the year on a 7-game winning streak. They had big wins over Michigan State, Oregon, and Texas. They return 14 starters, including quarterback Michael Penix Jr., who should have been a Heisman finalist, by the way. I have no idea how he did not get invited to New York. And he's back with two future NFL wide receivers to throw to, guys that are going to be impact players on Sunday. The defensive front seven is mostly back intact as well. This conference is deeper than it's been in a really long time, especially at the quarterback position. So it could be a tough road to get to the college football playoff. But this is a team that has the talent to pull it off.
Yeah, Washington is one of those teams in terms of when I know there's always some player that's coming out of Washington out here in the draft that I might have missed because I'm on the East Coast that I did not see some long, lanky, shutdown corner or some big defensive tackle that I've never heard of that comes in and dominates or is just a solid 10-year player. So, yeah, Washington is one of those teams that can sneak up on you. They consistently build. They consistently have junior and senior teams, and those teams pop like every 3 to 4 years is what I always see in Washington, so it must be that time again. You spoke about them being in your backyard. I'll talk about a team in my backyard that also has a Heisman hopeful and also a top two NFL hopeful next year in Drake May and the University of North Carolina, the Tar Heels. Coached by Mack Brown, I think the hype that's around Drake May, a lot of people don't know who he is. A lot of people have not really seen him. But this is a year that all eyes are going to be on him simply because of his draft stats, which is going to bring a lot of attention to the team. And that, I think that's going to push them. And hopefully Mack Brown, being the seasoned veteran coach that he is, can have them ready to motivate them to have a shot to be in the college playoffs as well. If Drake May is who we think he is and he wants to prove a point, this is the perfect year to prove the point that you belong in, if not the number one, at least top two quarterback picks in the upcoming draft, is lead this team to the college playoffs. And I think so. I have North Carolina as my other one.
Yeah, the ACC feels a little bit wide open this year. It would not surprise me if the Tar Heels shock some people because, like you said, anytime you've got a quarterback like Drake May, you've got a legit chance to make some real noise. Like you mentioned, Mack Brown, a great coach that's really done a nice job since he's got back in North Carolina. My last team here, Alex, I'm jumping over to the Big Ten, the Wisconsin Badgers. This is a program that consistently finds itself in the mix for the Big Ten title, despite having less talent than programs like Ohio State and Michigan. Now they add new head coach Luke Fickell, who's already led Cincinnati to a college football playoff, and this team becomes even more dangerous. He's already upgraded this roster through the transfer portal, landing SMU quarterback Tanner Mordecai and some playmakers, including wide receiver CJ Williams from USC. Wisconsin also returns 8 starters from a defense that ranked number 17 in the nation in points allowed per game last season. This is looking like a complete football team that can make some noise.
They just get their players and they develop. And every 3 to 4 years, those players become juniors and seniors and that team pops. And they always are very well coached. I mean, you're now bringing in Luke Fickell, who we saw what he did with Cincinnati and how he built that team and what that team was able to do and produce to the next level as well. You now bring him to Wisconsin. He can do the same things, implement the same type of situations. And again, they have a very good, solid, always repetitive recruiting style of getting their players. And then, like I said before, every 3 to 4 years, they pop with a junior or and or senior class together that have played at least 3 to 4 years together and they know each other well. So you're playing teams that are grown men that have been coached hard, that especially you don't want to go to Wisconsin and play them. Nobody wants to go to Wisconsin and play them any point in time during the winter as well. But they are battle tested. They run the ball and they're tough-nosed and they will hit you in the mouth. They come to hit you in the mouth, whether it be on their offensive line or their defensive line. Just check out, if you know, you know, just check out who they've put into the NFL on those lines because they win in the trenches and I think they'll continue to win and this must be another year for them to pop as well.
Hey, PGF Nation, are you tired of the same old bland food at your tailgate parties? Well, let me tell you about my friends at the Tailgate Foodie, the seasoning and barbecue sauce company that specializes in elevating your tailgate and backyard cooking game. With their unique blend of spices and sauces, the Tailgate Foodie will take your taste buds on a flavor journey that you won't forget. Use code PINTGLASSFOODIE for 15% off your first order at thetailgatefoodie.com. Zencastr is the ultimate web-based podcasting solution. It provides high-quality audio and video podcast production and hosting. With a full suite of professional tools, podcasters can seamlessly record, produce, and publish studio-quality content all from one dashboard. Zencastr's post-production process takes the headache out of audio production. Set the right podcast loudness and levels while reducing background noise with a click of a button. Coordinating all your guests to record in person is painful and tedious. Easily invite up to 11 participants per recording with one click. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use my code PGFP and you'll get 30% off your first 3 months of Zencastr Professional. I want you to have the same easy experiences I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. Hey there, PGF Nation. You know what's important when you're having a good time? Staying hydrated. And that's where Liquid IV comes in, the category-winning hydration brand that's fueling your well-being. With just one stick of Liquid IV, you get 2 times faster hydration than water alone, plus 5 essential vitamins to keep you feeling your best. And let's not forget about the convenience factor. The packaging is perfect for on the go, whether you're tailgating or just hanging out on the couch. But what really sets Liquid IV apart is the amazing flavors. Personally, I'm all about the Concord Grape and Lemon Lime. And with 3 times the electrolytes of traditional sports drinks, Liquid IV is made with premium ingredients to give you the hydration and nourishment you need. Get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code PGFP at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code PGFP at liquidiv.com. So next time you're cracking open a cold one and settling in for the big game, make sure you've got Liquid IV by your side. Trust me, your body will thank you. All right, Alex, last week we had our top 3 NFL offensive breakout players for 2023. We're going to jump to the defensive side this week. Why don't you kick this off?
I spoke about this player in another pod and just referencing him in this Kansas City Chiefs defensive line. The player I'm speaking of is Karlaftis. I knew I was going to screw it up, even though I said it in my head 10 times before I said it. This is the reason that the team was comfortable moving on, letting Carlos Dunlap walk, and as well as also letting Frank Clark walk as well. He is an energizer on the field. He has a very high motor. He's not Max Crosby high motor, but he has a very high motor. And playing next to Chris Jones and on that defensive line, he's been able to find and fit as a spot player and make the most of the snaps that he had when he was in rotation with Frank Clark and Carlos Dunlap. But now handing over the keys to him and having him next to Chris Jones, who's going to see primarily double teams, and George is going to see mostly single team, he's going to be able to beat his defender. And I expect to see a breakout season from him. I'm looking for about maybe 10 sacks from him, and I would say maybe about 15 tackles for loss, because I think his quick twitch and he sees ball, hits ball, meaning the running back, if they're running back, he sees him, he makes a beeline for him, and he hits with intention. Only 22 years old, I think he has an opportunity to have a breakout season with the Kansas City Chiefs.
I like George Karlaftis a lot too, Alex. He's a guy that I really liked when I watched his tape when we were doing the NFL draft stuff last season. He was a guy that I just saw as being a solid all-around prospect. There wasn't a lot of holes in his game coming out of Purdue, and I knew that when the Chiefs got this guy late in the first round, I said, man, there is a great value pick because you're getting a guy that's just going to be ready to play at a high level right away. And here he is, year 2, probably ready to break out and become a really good player, because that's usually what the Chiefs do when they draft guys. It seems like year 2, year 3, all of a sudden they pop and they turn out being great players. So he's a guy that I'm certainly watching as well, Alex. I'm going to stick with the defensive line for my first pick, Green Bay Packers defensive lineman Devontae Wyatt. He was a rotational guy last year as a rookie, but he's a former first-round pick out of Georgia that flashed legitimate talent, especially towards the end of last season. He started to come on. He'll enter 2023 as the starter this year because the Packers let Jerron Reed and Dean Lowry go in free agency. So he showed that he can stuff the run, push the pocket last year. Wyatt had 8 pressures, 5 quarterback hurries, and 1.5 sacks. Not numbers that are going to blow you away, but for a guy who is a rotational guy, he really started to play well, like I said, down the stretch, really started to show some of that talent that we saw at Georgia. But I expect those type of numbers to make a big jump now that he's going to be starting for the Packers.
I really like the way the Packers have always drafted, especially, I would say, the last 5 years, what we've seen between their first and second round draft picks. I mean, that line and the Rashawn Gary's and I forgot the gentleman they picked up out of Georgia this year, but they look like that team is going to be hard pressed. They're going to run the ball, they're going to play old school smash mouth football. So the Packers are going to be a team that I'm really looking forward to watching. Devontae Wyatt is one of those as well. Another player that I have, and I think this is going to be due to, I think because Von Miller of the Buffalo Bills is going to be very reserved and he's not going to take up the snaps that he normally would take up. I think looking at Gregory Rousseau and looking at his maturation from his first year now going to his third year, he is due for a breakout season. And I think this is the year that we're going to see it. He was drafted. The Bills drafted back-to-back defensive linemen in the first and second rounds 2 years ago. It was Gregory Rousseau and then Carlos Basham. And I think Gregory Rousseau was the guy that's in the leader in the clubhouse in terms of taking all the snaps. And I believe we're going to be looking at a breakout season for him. Ed Oliver just got that big contract, so he's locked in. Now it's going to be, because they're not going to be able to keep both Rousseau and Basham, someone is going to have to win out. And I believe that the person here is going to be Gregory Rousseau, who's going to put in the work, who has been putting in the work, and will get the edge and the start over Basham and take up the snaps from Von Miller and be able to do some damage on that Bills line, because they will be looking for a lot more from that line after they lost Edmonds, their linebacker, from their top linebacker. So they're going to lean a lot more on this defensive line to do a lot more things. And I think Gregory Rousseau is going to shine in that.
Yeah, he's a guy that's really flashed, and he's a guy that I'm expecting big things from as well. Just a natural pass rusher, a guy with a lot of talent. I think he could put it all together this season as well. My next breakout player, Alex, Cincinnati Bengals safety Daxton Hill, a 2022 first-round pick. Hill is the reason that the Bengals felt okay losing Jesse Bates in free agency. It's that simple. He didn't play much as a rookie, but we saw some flashes of what he could do in the preseason, and I loved his tape coming out of Michigan. He has big-time speed, 4.3 40-yard dash. This guy can really fly. He's an explosive athlete. He's had a year to sit and learn defensive coordinator Lou Anarumo's system. I expect a big year from Daxton Hill.
Yeah, we had a lot of questions when we were looking at, and you know, we've had a lot of discussion about, rather off-air, about the Cincinnati Bengals losing both safeties as well as Eli Apple, regardless of how you feel about him or not. But they did lose a lot from that defensive backfield. So one of those guys is going to have to break on the, and Hill, if Hill is the one, then he's the one that's going to need to shine, because there definitely needs to be someone pops out of that defensive backfield to shine for the team. Another player that I had is, and this is someone that we talked about when we did our DB draft, J.C. Horn. I think J.C. Horn is due for a breakout season. I think that entire Carolina defense, and again, I'll tease by saying I can't wait till we start talking about our rankings and what we see for the upcoming season, because I think you're going to be surprised about a lot of things that I have to say. And Carolina is going to be one of those teams. But I think that defense, what they did since they drafted all defense that I think about maybe 3 years ago, and how they hit on a lot of those plays, J.C. Horn being one of them as well, I think he's now ascending and looking to have a breakout season. He was slow out of the gate because he had an injury his first year. Then last year he played, for the most part, he played 13 games, started 13 games with 3 interceptions, 7 pass deflections, and 53 tackles. I think now that he's fully healthy going into his third year, Carolina is going to see the investment they made in terms of drafting J.C. Horn 8th overall 2 years ago. He's a guy that's a lockdown corner. He has size. He has speed. He's not scared to get in anybody's face. He's a press corner. He's a man corner. And he will lock your guy up. And the way that defense is shaping up, I think he's going to have a breakout season this year.
I love that pick, Alex. J.C. Horn is a guy that I was sky high on coming out of the draft. I absolutely loved this kid out of South Carolina. And he was a guy that I thought was going to be a Pro Bowl level player day one. We've seen the flashes. We've seen what he can do when he's healthy, we just haven't seen enough of it. We just haven't seen him on the field enough. And if he can shake this injury bug and be a consistent starter this year, I think the rest of the NFL is going to just see how special of a player this guy can be. He's a guy that I'm certainly excited to watch, Alex. My last breakout player for 2023, Alex, Baltimore Ravens, David Ajabu. This guy is an edge defender with huge upside. I mean, big time talent coming out of the draft, but he got injured at his pro day. If you guys remember, really unfortunate story because he had early first round talent. He was a guy that I think a lot of people thought could maybe even go in the top 15 picks, but instead slid all the way to pick 45 because of the injury. He missed basically all of last season, but now he's back. He's healthy. And the reports from the Ravens beat writers is that he looks incredible and that he's been a nightmare for Ravens offensive linemen to handle. The linebacker room is going to be crowded in Baltimore, but he's a guy that might start out as a rotational guy, but by the end of the year, I think he's going to be making a big impact for that Ravens defense.
Like you said, if he didn't get hurt that pro day, we're looking at definitely a top 20 pick. And now he's probably raring to go. We know what that Ravens coaching staff does when they get those linebackers in there in that 3-4 set. So we know that he's going to be put in the best position to maximize his skill set. So, yeah, that is definitely one guy. Not only that, that is a guy that they're actually going to depend on because the number one thing that Ravens defense was missing last year was the pass rush. James still find it with James Houston. They were still trying to find it with Jason Pierre-Paul. They were signing anybody off the street that could give them any semblance of a pass rush. And if you're telling me that this guy, at minimum, if he can play the quote-unquote Alden Smith role where he's just a pure pass rusher and cause some of the havoc that we saw when Alden Smith played in that role, he's going to be a problem. He will definitely have a breakout year.
All right, we've been doing our top eight positional drafts. We're going to jump back to the offensive side of the ball this week and draft our top eight running backs for the 2023 season. Alex, as always, why don't you kick this off?
Number one with a bullet, without a doubt, is for me, Nick Chubb. I've seen a few disrespectful lists that have Nick Chubb out of the top five simply because he does not do all of the things that these other running backs do, which is catch out of the backfield. However, Nick Chubb, coming off the knee injury that he had, coming into the league and basically just going gangbusters. I mean, from day one, even when he wasn't a starter, but his first year, 996, second year, 1494, third year, 1067, fourth year, 1259, and fifth year, 1525, being his best year so far. And every single year, nothing below eight touchdowns. Every single year, 8, 8, 12, 8, 12. Consistent production, and every single year, over 5 yards per carry. That's the key thing there. That means this person is always falling forward and he's getting you 5 yards at a clip, which means third down is always a short down. And he's doing this alongside even with Kareem Hunt in the backfield. He's still having this level of production while not even getting over 300 carries. This is a quintessential bell cow running back that anybody should want on their team, regardless if you feel he's not what you need when it comes to catching out of the backfield. His production on the ground from a touchdown perspective as well as a yards per carry perspective lets you know that this guy should be number one.
Alex, I was hoping that you wouldn't take Chubb number one because that was my guy. I thought for sure, I'm like, if he doesn't go Chubb here, Chubb's got to be my guy at number two. I thought I was going to be gift drafted Nick Chubb there. The guy is an absolute beast. He's the best pure runner in the league. Let's just end it right there. Best pure runner in the NFL. He's been a consistent beast since he's been in the league. Just such a good player. I have no problem with that pick at all because, like I said, if you didn't pick him, I certainly was going to. That leaves the door open for me to go with Christian McCaffrey. This is a guy who really showed on the national stage in a lot of ways because I think we forget about this guy because he was playing in Carolina on a bad team, a team that doesn't really get a lot of national big TV attention. And I think NFL fans almost forgot how special this guy is. He goes to the 49ers, a big-time pillar franchise in the NFL, and completely flips the script for this team. We forget that the 49ers were spinning their tires. They looked like a team that was going nowhere quick. Then they make the trade for McCaffrey, and everything changes. This team goes on a huge run. Their offense explodes once he enters that team, and they make a run all the way to the NFC Championship game. And he was a huge, huge reason why. Easily the most dynamic dual skill set runner receiver in the NFL. I don't even think it's debatable what this guy can do as a runner and pass catcher. This guy can line up in the slot and run wide receiver routes. Really great player, and it was really fun to see him back healthy and playing on a great team and in a great offense.
Yeah, Christian McCaffrey, dynamic running back. I mean, I think we all knew that coming when we saw him at Stanford coming into the league, and then we saw him in his first few years in Carolina. Fortunately, there were some injuries that may have held him back for a little, and which is probably why Carolina may have moved off of him, which is always going to be my holdback when it comes to a running back, is I'm looking at what are you doing? Are you able to stay on the field? But when after his third season, he had those two seasons where he only played 10 games in two seasons, and it seemed simply because of the trend of the running back over the past few years that he was trending down. However, to your point, once he got traded, he must have gotten rejuvenated. I mean, because that coming back and having basically 1,150 yards and then 8 touchdowns, and we know the monster that he is, having 85 catches for 741 yards and 5 touchdowns last year between Carolina and San Francisco. We know the dual threat running back that this guy is. And at his size, he has wide receiver size at 5'11", 205. To Brad's point, once you put him in the slot, he becomes a problem because he is a crisp route runner, similar to his father, if you know who his father is, in Ed McCaffrey. He's where he's supposed to be. He does not drop balls. He's very sure-handed, a very heady player, a very smart player. So shout out to Christian McCaffrey for having a bounce back year and getting himself back up into the top echelon of running backs. For my next running back, I'm going to stay, and it's going to sound like I'm staying old school, but we cannot discount what we have seen from this gentleman in Derrick Henry. I'm sorry, I get it. Another player that's not big time out of the backfield, but this guy is the size of what you would want your quintessential linebacker to be at 6'3", 250 pounds, but he runs a 4.5 and he's a running back, and he runs everything over. He runs with intention. We've all seen the highlights of him tossing Josh Norman to the side or tossing defenders left and right to the side and just mashing them up. You all choose him and use him similar to how we all, and I'm going to date myself, used Bo Jackson back when we played Tecmo Bowl. But, and then I think a lot of people looked at, similar to what I just said about Christian McCaffrey, the injury, and said, okay, that's it. The amount of usage, because he does have the highest running back usage in the league in terms of carries over since he's been in the league. But I think people thought that he was going to trend down. The funny thing is, though, when he got hurt in week 8, he got hurt in week 8 and was still top 10 and did not play for 8 straight weeks and was still a top 10 producing running back. Had already had by week 8, halfway through the season, had 937 yards and 10 touchdowns. And we were probably on our way to seeing either a back-to-back 2,000-yard season or a historical season where he was going to finally break the rushing record. But then again, he bounced back again last year and had 1,538 yards rushing and 13 touchdowns, but people think it's forgettable because we've been spoiled by what we've consistently seen from those prior 2 years. And so we cannot forget that what this guy has done, and he's doing it on a team where he solely is the offense. When you game plan for the Tennessee Titans, you're only game planning for one thing. It's not Ryan Tannehill. It's only Derrick Henry, and he's consistently showed up and showed out.
Yeah, you're right. I think a lot of people are expecting a slowdown from him and how much tread is still left on the tires, but there's no doubt about it. This guy has been a special player in this league for a long time and just an incredible back. That stat you said about him being in the top 10 after week 8 and not playing is ridiculous. I mean, that just tells you how special a player. Alex, I'm going to take Saquon Barkley. And this is a guy similar to McCaffrey, had a big bounce back season after some injuries. Now, in his second season back from a torn ACL, he really showed us the player that we saw early in his career when he was the rookie of the year. He had a career high 1,312 rushing yards last season. It was the fourth most in the NFL. he was a big time catalyst for that Giants team that took a huge step forward last year and ended up making the playoffs and winning a playoff game when, quite frankly, most people had them pegged as a top five draft pick team. The type of season he had and the impact he had on that offense was hard to ignore, just what he did for them and the spark he gave them week in and week out. Seeing him healthy and back to the Saquon Barkley of old, I hope we see it again this year because he is a special player when he's right.
Yeah, this is a guy that was a highlight reel coming out of Penn State. We all saw a lot of the cuts that he was doing, which were phenomenal and making all the plays. And then unfortunately he had that injury plague season. Then there were a few seasons right after where he was trying to bounce back. He got hurt again. So we had a little bit of an issue there. And then this year we saw him back at full strength and the Giants came out of nowhere. We have to give and salute Saquon Barkley. Again, I am a person that's a stickler for injuries. However, but when they bounce back and they show and they prove, we have to give credit where credit is due. So salute to Saquon Barkley. For my next pick, I'm going to sound like a homer here, but I'm not a homer. I'm not a homer here. Josh Jacobs. Josh Jacobs last year showed and proved that he was a guy that should have had his fifth-year option picked up. Out of the five first-round back draft picks that we had, none of them are still on a team with the exception of Josh Jacobs. Every last one of those players are gone. And I repeat, five first-round picks, and they were all top 20 picks at that. They're all gone, with the exception of Josh Jacobs. Hits with intention. He runs with a bad attitude when he can stay healthy. And last year, everything paid off. I mean, he had his higher yards per average carry in 4.9. We saw him in that Seattle game with the 86-yard run up the gut, 1,653 yards, although 340 attempts is a lot. But he did show and he did prove that he belonged on the field, that he belonged on this team, and that he deserved to have, at least at minimum, get his contract extended and as well as had that fifth-year option picked up with what he had consistently been doing since he has come to the Rays, being a perennial Pro Bowl player as well at that. So I'm going to go with Josh Jacobs. And I want to mention also, he also catches the ball out of the backfield, something that during the Gruden years, he was reluctant to use, but since Josh McDaniels has been there, he's been showing in that he can do some things. He had last year 53 catches for 400 yards, but that's an element that he actually can do that's rarely been used in the previous regime that looks like it's getting utilized a lot more now.
Yeah, Josh Jacobs had a monster year last year, led the league in rushing. You can make a case just based on that he should be number one on this list, especially considering I think he's still got some gas left in the tank. I think we could still see some big-time seasons from him these next couple of years. I'm going to take Jonathan Taylor, the Indianapolis Colts. Now, this is a guy who came into the season with huge expectations after what we'd seen from the 2021 season. Didn't quite have as good a year as many expected last year, but this guy was still putting up big numbers, still a big-time productive back. Before being placed on injured reserve, he was having a nice season, and I think he would have had a much bigger year if it wasn't for that. But I think what a lot of people don't talk about is the drop-off that we saw from the Colts' offensive line. This was a unit that many people considered one of the best offensive lines in the league going into last season. And statistically, especially if you look at PFF and some of these sites that really dig into the analytics, that line was bad. It was one of the worst offensive lines in the league. And I think that really played a factor in some of the production drop-off we saw from Jonathan Taylor. But at this point in the draft, Alex, it's hard to ignore Taylor sitting on the board here.
Yeah, one of the last true home run hitters that when he gets in the open field, you're not going to catch him. I mean, his only knock and reason, well, I don't want to say the reason he went in the second round, but his only knock was really coming out of Wisconsin. He had a problem holding on to the ball. But once he finally got in the game, it looks like they kind of righted that ship a little bit. We saw the explosiveness. We obviously saw the year that he had last year. I know personally because I had him on fantasy, so I won. But we know, and he did, to your point, last year was a down year. Obviously, their quarterback position was in shambles. Their wide receiver situation was in shambles and the offensive line played down. So he had a down year. They had a down year. But I think coming into this year, again, being the home run hitter that he is, and if you're talking about including Anthony Richardson on the field with that running back, with the coach that they brought in from the Eagles, I think we can start to maybe perhaps see some fun things that can happen with Jonathan Taylor. So not only will we be looking at him in terms of being one of the top running backs, he's also a fantasy bullet point as well to see if where people will start drafting what his APR will be on the fantasy boards as well. For my final guy, this is a guy that I spoke about this team earlier in the podcast, and when I said they look like they're just going to really play a lot of smash mouth, old school smash mouth football, that's Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones has been a very consistent running back since coming into this league. But with what they have in A.J. Dillon as well as him, they can create for what would be for most teams, especially if you have to go to Green Bay once we get into October. They are going to be a problem, specifically with Aaron Jones, who also can catch the ball out of the backfield. He's simply gotten better and better every single year receiving the ball out of the backfield. We know he can stay on the field for third down plays as well. So he is a quintessential three down running back, bell cow running back. They just happen to have another guy in A.J. Dillon that they can use as well in that offense that'll help Jordan Love matriculate. I just like Aaron Jones. I like his consistency. I like that he just does what I expect him to do every single time I see him on the field. He is just the picture of consistency within that offense. I like Aaron Jones.
Yeah, that's a great pick, Alex. Consistent, you hit it on the head, because he crossed the 1,000-yard threshold for the third time in his career. One of the most efficient running backs in the NFL. Really good player for sure, especially this far down the list. My last pick here is a guy that we debated recently on this podcast, Alex. I think I'm a little higher on him than you are, it sounds like, but I'm going to go with Tony Pollard of the Dallas Cowboys. Like we talked about on a prior episode, I think this is a guy who showed his breakout ability last season when he finally got the touches. We know that he had been the backup to Zeke Elliott for the first couple years of his career. Now he's the guy in Dallas. There's some debate whether he can be a lead dog, number one back. I still like the idea of bringing in a guy, maybe a second running back, and having more split carries with a guy like Tony Pollard. But I still want him to get the majority of the carries, because I think he's a special player who put up big numbers in that offense last season for a reason. I think he's due for a really nice season again in Dallas.
Yeah, you know, you're right. This is a player that we debated about. I just don't see it for Tony Pollard. But, you know, we have to go off the production and what he showed us last year in a down year for Zeke. But he was the home run hitter. He was the guy that was getting the plays. He was the guy that was running it up the gut, that had a great and incredible season last year that led them to the decision to say that we can move on from Zeke and put you as our primary number one. So I could see why people have him and why you chose him in this position as well, because he's shown and proved, and the team has also said that they believe in him to this fashion, that they are now moving off of Zeke and putting Tony Pollard in position.
Guys, that is going to do it for today's episode. Hope you enjoyed it, PGF Nation. But before we go, be sure to subscribe to our free newsletter at pintglassfootball.com for exclusive content directly to your inbox. I want to give a shout out to our friends at The Tailgate Foodie for sponsoring today's episode. Check them out at thetailgatefoodie.com. Once again, I'm Brad Fowler. He's Alex Higdon. This is Pint Glass Football, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Pint Glass Football Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and follow us on Twitter at PGF Podcast.